The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It's Friday the 9th of January 2026. It's just turned 5 minutes past nine and you're very welcome along to Friday's show. And of course, this is our first week of being slimmed down. So we've had to rejig things a little bit to make it a better listening experience for you, of course. And we have our regular legal slot with Seamus Gunn. That's going to come up in the first hour from 9.30. So you've got about 25 minutes to get your legal questions into Seamus right now. I'll remind you of the contact details in the not too distant future. Our Friday panel is into the second hour and we do have an excellent Friday panel for you today. We have Sinn Féin Chief Whip Padraig McLaughlin joining us, Claire McDonough, a business owner and member of Letterkenny Chamber, and Councillor Martin McDermott, who's the Cathaoirleach of the Inishowen Municipal District. So those are our Friday panellists and they'll join us just after the 10 o'clock news. Don't forget you can watch all of today's show, as always, across our social media channels. If you want to watch on your smart TV or your Fire Stick, YouTube's your best bet, and you can just search Highland Radio Ireland there and watch the show in its entirety and all of our guests. That app is good for you, of course, across your mobile devices. And we're also on the Facebook and X platforms. Really, just search Highland Radio and you'll find us. Let's have a look at the papers this morning. The Derry Journal. Derry Magistrates Court has been told that the case against a priest facing sex offences involves some 650 pages of communications that police have to examine. Edward Gallagher, 58, of Orchard Park in Lifford, had been charged with one count of attempted sexual communication with a child on dates between April 2nd and April 17th, 2025. Gallagher has also been charged with seven further offences, including inciting a child to engage in sexual activity and causing a child to watch sexual activity on April 17th last year, as well as charges of possessing indecent images of children. I feel I have an awful lot to say on that, but it's an ongoing trial and there is a presumption of innocence there as well. Speaking of innocence and innocence lost, an absolutely horrific story from down the country. A devastated relative discovered the body of a 12-year-old boy who was killed in a horror murder-suicide. Young Oisin O'Reilly was found lifeless at his home on Leland Drive in Clondalk in West Dublin yesterday. Beforehand, his father, Wayne O'Reilly's body was found at a separate location at Cherry Orchard Drive in Ballyfermot at 8:30 a.m. Detectives probing the case believe the father, Wayne, who's 48, murdered his son in the early hours of yesterday morning at the home they lived in before fleeing. They then suspect he made his way to the second property in Ballyfermot where he took his own life in the back garden. Just reading on here, there's a spelling error here. There was previous interaction with Gardaí. They immediately raised concerns for the child's welfare. Tusa, the Child and Family Agency, confirmed that Oisin and the family were known to them, but stated he was not in the care of the state. Now, you may have seen, although I don't expect you to remember, that there was a missing persons appeal for both of these individuals a couple of months ago. They were found a couple of days later. Obviously, the immediate thought here is with beautiful wee Oisin and what happened to him. But again, unfortunately, there's going to be an awful lot of questions that are going to be needing answers. And I'm not going to do that now this morning, but I think you know them yourselves. But the two had gone missing previously. Tusla was aware of the situation. And now, unfortunately, Oisin has died and his father took his own life. So as to say, there's going to be a lot of scrutiny of that. The Irish Daily Mail this morning. Independent TDs and Fianna Fáil backbenchers mounted a successful last-minute campaign against the Mersey trade deal to pressure the Taoiseach to vote against it. Farmers feel the deal will flood the market with cheap beef and poultry. And the worries were heightened this week when the Department of Agriculture confirmed contaminated Brazilian beef entered the Irish food chain last month. Although the programme for government pledged to oppose the deal in its current form. Micheál Martin appeared to open the door to supporting it this week, speaking in China on Wednesday. The Fianna Fáil leader said a lot of progress has been made on safeguards. And we do know that we do, not us, but those that represent us, do like to be seen as the good boys of Europe. And there has been some criticism of Ireland's stance in relation to this because we are an open economy. We're very export-driven here, and yet we are being seen to oppose a trade deal that would have export benefits for other European countries as well. There's a lot of good in this Mercosur deal. If you're not interested in farming and you're not interested in forestry, if you know what I mean, i.e. the lungs of the earth. So the government were in on a sticky wicket. And I imagine that they've reached out to the overlords in Europe and said, look, you know, domestically, there's a decision we have to make here. But you know where we are. You know where we are if you need us. I do know a lot of you are following Enoch Burke's story. And a disciplinary appeals body has temporarily agreed not to take any further steps in reviewing the dismissal of Enoch Burke from Wilson's Hospital School. Mr. Burke, who is in prison for civil contempt relating to the dispute with the school, sought a temporary injunction against the disciplinary appeals panel at the High Court yesterday. He has been detained in Mountjoy Prison since late November for breaches of a court order directing him not to trespass at the County Westmeath School where he worked as a teacher. He's been engaged in legal dispute with the board of the school stemming from a request in 2022 from the then principal that a student be addressed by a new name and pronoun. Since then, Mr. Burke has been found to have repeatedly trespassed on the school property. Rightio, so just to let you know, welcome your comments. If you have anything to reflect on following that brief look through our newspapers, get in touch with us. If you've got any questions for Seamus Gunn as it relates to legal matters, please get in touch with us as well. Or if there's something you want to put to the panel, we're certainly going to be discussing the Mercosur deal. We're certainly going to be discussing the big conversation that's happening nationally and around the world at the moment as it relates to people having intimate images created of them on the X platform. And also to a new survey on sentiment has been released, which shows that, you know, the public isn't necessarily very confident about the future. And obviously, both our elected representatives and indeed business person Claire McDonough should have a view on what they see for 2026 in terms of where we're at. Helen Hayes-Sweeney joins me now on the programme, a former school principal. Helen, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning to your listeners.
Thank you very much for your time. Right, you've been writing about emigration and I suppose the whole conversation around it, the reason it's happening and the impact as well too it has on families, communities and I suppose rural infrastructure.
Yes, well, I suppose I'm undertaking a PhD in history and my research area is 19th century emigrant letters from Ulster to North America. So that was the zone that I was in this week, if you like. And I live in Fanad, which is a rural community, as you know, where there have been a lot of young people emigrating to Australia and Canada and Dubai and so on over the last number of years. And I suppose heading back, the ones that were lucky enough to be back for Christmas, heading back now after the Christmas holidays and the families, I suppose, you know, missing them and bereft and so on. So that's, I suppose, where I was when I read in the Irish Times on Monday a letter sort of that I felt was diminishing that experience. So I decided that I would pen a response to that letter, and I suppose that's why I'm on your show this morning.
Yeah, and what was the key points that you wanted to get across in that communication, Helen?
Well, I suppose in the letter that was written on Monday and appeared in the Irish Times, the writer was saying that you know, the happy scenes that we see on RTE, people coming back at Dublin Airport for the Christmas holidays, he called that maudlin, out of date shtick, and said that this idea of the trauma of emigration was really past its sell date in Ireland at the moment, and that people were emigrating by choice, and that they were well-educated and with modern technology, that they were having the time of their lives in Australia and New Zealand, and that a number of young people that he spoke to that were home for Christmas said they would never return to Ireland, to live in Ireland permanently, as they love living and working in the US, and how wonderful it was to hear this. And it was time to consign historic trauma and folk memory of emigration and sort of build a bridge and get over it.
But that's kind of jumping forward quite a number of steps as to why they feel they have to leave in the first place.
Yes, yes. And I think, you know, choice is a very broad term. I suppose he's right, and we're lucky in the sense that these young people are well-educated, they have trades, they have professions, but still, they're looking at Ireland, and I think it was Catherine Walsh, the Director of Policy and Advocacy at the National Youth Council of Ireland, said prior to the budget that the point isn't about hardship, as maybe it would have been in the past. It's about young people feeling that Ireland is no longer a place in which they can build a future.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose that's what I took issue with. And also the fact that even though we do have modern communication today, the likes of Dubai and Canada and Australia are a very long way away. And that the idea that they'll never come back and live permanently in Ireland, I contended that should trouble us rather than reassure us.
I think too, ironically, because of the advantages in communications, it means it's probably less likely that they might return home, because, you know, that draw is probably satisfied, which is bad news for us. But the truth is, and sometimes I wonder if how much people get out sometimes, because unfortunately, the people I see planning to go to Australia are young people who are well qualified, but their options to work are down the country where they don't want to go. Their friends have left. They feel lonely. It's very hard to get on the road. They don't see any prospect of them moving out from under their parents' roof in their own community. And they feel they're almost being driven to this life abroad. That's the impression I get from young people I engage with.
I agree. And I mean, a young person said to me lately that you spent 4 years at university and you get a degree, say in business or whatever, and in Ireland you come out and you're earning little more than the minimum wage. And, you know, as you say, the more people who go, their friends are going. I was reading an article on Tourish.ie this morning, and somebody was saying that I think their entire university class was now abroad. And, you know, people can go, feel that they can go to Australia, they can live independently, which, you know, may not be an option here, even finding a place to rent, even never mind the price of rent at the moment. So they feel that they can have an independent life. Their friends are out there, more so than here. So, you know, I think it offers, you can understand why, and on the cold January morning, you can understand why it is an attractive option for these people. But as you say, you know, we are losing out on the skill and the talent and the enthusiasm of these people. We need them here from an employment point of view, but we need them here from a society point of view as well.
Yeah.
And I suppose they feel, even from a work point of view, that they're much better treated, maybe in education or in healthcare employments in countries like Australia, than they will be here at home.
Yes, and a lot of, I would imagine, much of the class that you referenced were actually targeted by employers from another country saying, look, we value you, this is what we can offer you, there's $5,000 for coming over, we'll sort out accommodation. I'm not saying that's the case, but that often is what happens. Yet here, say for instance in health or education, we've got nurses, we've got consultants, we've got doctors, we've got teachers, we've got Gardaí that are burnt out and don't feel that they have a good life, they don't feel they have a good working environment, and they don't think they're paid enough. And we seem to...
Definitely. I mean, education, I taught for 35 years, and I suppose towards the end of my career, I was able to see the increasing pressures, and from talking to colleagues who are still at the coalface, the increasing pressure, and they feel the lack of value for their work. And it's the same with, I know from talking to people who have maybe nursing qualifications and who have friends in Australia, and that the system has a better work-life balance, much less stressful work environment. So I suppose it used to be the lure of America, but it seems very much now to be the lure of Australia. And I just felt that the initial letter in the Irish Times on Monday, that it was rather tone deaf. it wasn't clued into, I suppose, the lived experience of a lot of families throughout Ireland at the moment. And, you know, he was saying, it's, you know, we can go on great holidays, and I was speaking to people, yeah, who have gone to Australia and had great holidays visiting their children who are living out there. But I was making the point that most parents would readily exchange that to have their children and potentially grandchildren at home in Ireland with them every day.
But the thing is, Helen, this is why this situation is not necessarily going to reverse itself anytime soon, because the contentment the parents have that their children are okay and getting on okay, and maybe that trip over there a couple of weeks a year is enough. It's enough to keep them going, and the video calls, if you know what I mean. And I don't think that's a bad thing. And I also think people, the public, especially, you know, those who believe they're very open-minded or woke or whatever it might be, need to understand that when people criticise nurses, or when people criticise teachers and talk of all the holidays and all that type of stuff, and when people criticise people on social welfare, they're actually doing the government's work, because they can sit back and go, hey, no one's talking to us. No one's having a go at us. They're fighting amongst each other. And I think sometimes people, you know this phrase, you need to wake up. Sometimes I think we do need to wake up and say, right, your anger, your commentary, your disgust, your ire, your envy, is all of these emotions are actually giving the government a break, and your concerns are going in the wrong direction. Can I say one other thing too, Helen? The impact this has on our fibre, the community. There's schools all around this county that are struggling to maintain teachers and numbers. Principals actively trying to retain students to keep the teacher numbers or to even keep schools open. GEA clubs struggling often to field football teams. This leads to post office closures, Garda station closures, and all that type of stuff. There's an awful lot going on that could be linked back to emigration and that type of environment, Helen. Would you agree?
Oh, I would. I mean, we've seen schools, my own school included, which closed on the Fannett Peninsula, and I know other schools throughout Donegal and down the Western Seaboard the same. I suppose, you know, that's it. As you say, as parents, we want our children to be happy and content, and if that's in Australia, well and good. And I do make the point in my letter that, you know, that emigration is a positive experience, that these people will be enriched, and if they return, they'll bring that experience back to Ireland. But I think, as you say, this is so gradual, and it's a bit like, if it doesn't affect your family, you're not thinking about it. But it does have incremental effects going forward.
Doesn't it?
And yes, as parents age, if parents are young and fit and well and so on and can make the journey to Australia, then again, it's not as big an issue. But I think this, as you say, the creep effect going forward, this is going to have a detrimental effect on rural communities in particular. And we saw there before Christmas, Marty Morrissey going around some of the GA clubs in Kerry and so on, who are struggling for numbers. And we see that in rural communities in Donegal, where sports clubs are struggling to field underage teams and so on. So I think it's gradual. We're looking and saying it's great for them. They're having a great time in Australia. But gradually down the line, it's going to have a massive effect.
At the moment,
because of that, we're letting the government off the hook.
That's it, yeah. And I was going to say, Helen, at the moment we see as many people coming, returning to Irish people returning to Ireland as we see leaving. I don't see that being sustained into the future. I think what we're going to see is the number returning reduce all of the while. And as well, going back to the schools, I'm hearing all the time, oh, that's the last generation of Hugheses now, or that's the last generation of Gallaghers, or that's the last generation of, you know, childbirth in this country has dropped off 14,000 in 10 years. Our young people that might be the future are emigrating. You know, we have to fast forward to 2050, the aging population. Where are the young people? How does this country sustain? It starts becoming a big, big issue then.
Yeah, I mean, there is that. And there, I mean, there are businesses struggling for staff, whether it's hospitality and so on, and throughout the country, schools that are struggling to recruit teachers. And we know in our healthcare service and nursing home system, it's the same. So I think, I know a number of years ago when Joe McHugh was Minister for Education, he was actively involved in trying to entice teachers back. But I think it's a much broader societal problem, and I think it has to be approached as such. But as you say, it's not going to be solved anytime soon. But I think an acknowledgement of it in our society would be a first step. Mm-hmm. And as you say, I think in the last year, there were a lot of people coming back. You know, there was only maybe about 4,000 or something of a difference between Irish people who emigrated and those who returned. But if there is, there was a Red Sea poll last summer for the Youth Council, National Youth Council quoted that three in five under 25-year-olds were thinking of emigrating. Mm-hmm. And one in three were strongly considering it. So you're correct, I think, that going forward, we're going to see an increase in the levels of emigration.
And I don't think we even do the simple things to try and address this. I unless something changed between the last time I looked at this and now, I still think we don't actually even recognise teachers' career progression in another country. So when they return, they are back at almost square one again. I mean, something as simple as that.
I think it's at secondary level. I think at primary level, I possibly think that it is.
Okay, well, that's a recent enough change. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right, listen, lovely stuff, Helen. Thank you so much, by the way. Really enjoyed that conversation. Look after yourself.
Thank you for your interest, Greg. It seems to have really touched a chord of people at the time of the year that's in it. Thank you.
Because it affects us all. Thanks. Helen Hayes Sweeney, a former school principal. Just a couple of things on the roads, and keep these messages coming into us, by the way. It's important we all stay safe. The Gardaí tell us that the road between Calais and Newton is treacherous with black ice. Please take care. I'm told there's a lot of cars going off the road. Another question from a listener. If you hear any more about the road from Fintown to Letterkenny, can you let people know? Of course we can. That's what we're here for. Well, the council say all efforts are being made to ensure the Fintown road is made safe and reopened as soon as possible. But that may be much later today. Temperatures are not expected to rise today, so how do you clear this hardened-in black ice? But keep an ear to the news for updates and the council's social media pages, of course, for more information. Quick one on emigration. Don't forget Australia, a very expensive country to live in. It is, of course, right? But what is your pathway to success? What is your career growth? What is your potential? Throw in the weather. Throw in the Christmas on the beach. Throw in the fact that mum and dad, if you're lucky enough to have them, still come out and see you for a couple of weeks, or on your down week, you can go travelling all over the place and you can contact people every day by Zoom. You know, there's a lot of stuff is tipping the balance away from us, and there's a lot of stuff we could do to address that imbalance. Coming up in the second hour, we have the review of the week's news, our Friday panel. Pádraig McLoughlin of Sinn Féin, of course. Claire McDonough, businesswoman and member of Letterkenny Chamber. Le Maison in Letterkenny is Claire's business. Councillor Martin McDermott is the Cathaoirleach of Inishowen Municipal District. We're going to be discussing Grok AI, the EU MERS core deal, consumer sentiment, what 2026 has in store, and anything else that might come up through the course of that conversation. I'm just waiting here on Seamus Gunn to join me. It gives me a good opportunity to talk about what you want to talk about as well. Good morning, Greg. I just want to highlight an observation that I saw recently in the Inishowen and wider Donegal areas. The speed of cars. People need to take responsibility and beware of their own speed. People complain about speed vans and cameras. We need to be more careful and mindful when we get behind the wheel. And that's what's absent, unfortunately. I'm guilty of it myself at times. I'm no angel, don't get me wrong. Staying with the roads, there's another video online of young people racing around the roundabout at Bridge End. It's about time the Gardaí took action and started prosecuting these young people. It begs the question how they can close off main roundabouts and put on these displays. That is a real curiosity for me. I think if I got together with two other people and really wanted to sort of put an end to that, that you could. I'm on about in terms of if I had law enforcement. I don't mean in a vigilante sense. Hi, Greg. Regarding the potential EU fine of $28 billion by 2030 if we fail to meet emission targets, which we will, when you also add in that the EU have shafted us regarding our fishing quotas in our own territorial waters, shafted our agriculture industry on the reintroduction of wetlands plan, shafted our dairy industry with the reduction of herds, are in the process of shafting our beef industry by signing up to Mercosur, on top of requiring us to increase military spending and join the EU army while moving towards World War III. I think it might be time to leave the club, as the negativity greatly outweighs the positivity at this point. Now, obviously, some of what you said there is factual. can be argued. Some of it is what you believe may well happen. All valid points, of course, all your points. But maybe we should show our teeth a bit more within that club, you know, rather than sort of saying, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's good about Europe, but maybe if we were more assertive. On emissions, we don't have the sunshine they have in Southern Europe, and most EU countries have nuclear power, so they don't have to lower their emissions as much as Ireland is expected to. We're also an agricultural country, don't forget. We don't have a coherent energy plan in Ireland as it's weather dependent and use fossil fuel and gas as a backup 24/7 as the government have no energy plan for its taxation by stealth. Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn Solicitors, Letterkenny and Remelton, do not adjust your screen. He joins me now at 25 minutes to 10. Hi, Seamus.
Morning, Greg. How are we?
Good to see you. Happy New Year to you. I hope the Christmas and New Year were good to you, were they?
And yes, look at it. It was a lovely Christmas, you know, and trying to get back in some form of routine now, you know. It all comes and it all goes.
And it also takes a time, I find, to get back into routine. I'm only sort of...
It's nice to see a new format, so it's nice and fresh.
Are you on about us?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Good stuff. Thanks for that feedback. Seamus, I mean, I'm going to chat to you a little bit about US politics and it's global politics now at this stage. But there's an awful lot going on. Of course, we've got this situation with ICE killing a woman. We have Trump's situation, the US administration's encroachment into Venezuela. And you've got really effectively Donald Trump also saying that he might choose Greenland over NATO. I don't know. I know you want to have a word about something to do with the United States, but I'm very curious as to what element you're going for.
Yes, and well, you may be, because it's just sort of moving so quickly. You know, a couple of days ago, like sort of Monday, Venezuela, Greenland then we talked about, and Tuesday, and then you have Minneapolis, Minnesota then with ICE and that terrible atrocity, no matter what way you look at the video and that occurred with the killing of that fortunate lady, Rennie Good. It kind of beggars belief a bit, because you wonder, is everything getting a little bit out of control here? And so I think if we step back and try to go back to basics, a long, long time ago, way before our time, both our times, in mid-1940s, the UN Charter for Human Rights was actually signed, and ironically, in San Francisco, I believe, subject to correction, but it was, at the end of obviously, the Second World War. And there was certain fundamental principles put in place to assist all international countries and standards that were to be adhered to. And one of the main principal ones was the use of force against another, and how it could be or could not be justified, and what the circumstances would be for justifying it. It was quite actually restricted and quite straightforward in that in self-defense, yes, or if it was sanctioned by the Security Council, one of whom, of course, of the founder members was the USA. So those are the parameters in which you can actually step outside and say justifiably use force under the UN sanction. And everyone signs up to all that. And now, like it's a bit like the trade agreements, but even worse, because everything is the baby goes out with the bathwater here. And suddenly these principles do not seem to be applicable. And the condemnation of their breaches seems to be very... So not equivocal enough by the powers that be, such as the European powers, who are standing back a bit and sitting on the fence. And that's what I find very difficult to take on board, except that to some degree they are compromised themselves and they don't have the wherewithal to resist the USA in its current policies. But it's completely anti what was signed up to way back then when they've seen the perceived threat. And then you have NATO, as you rightly mentioned, and the NATO alliance was again this bloc, supposedly anti-communist at the time. That was the thinking behind it anyway. If under an article of that, whichever one, 5 or 6 or whatever, that if you invaded or if you used force against one of those powers, you used it against them all. And so here we are in a situation where that seems to be somewhat irrelevant as well.
Because Donald Trump knows, though, there's no NATO without the US, though. But the one observation that I thought was really quite interesting, one observation I made, I'm sure others made it too, was that in the week that Donald Trump went into Venezuela and abducted the leader of that country. I'm not saying I like the guy, but that's what happened, right? Now, it's not being reflected as such in the BBC or RTE even, but that's what they did. They went in and abducted the head of another country. And also at the point whereby effectively talking of the destruction of NATO by taking Greenland by any means necessary. The markets didn't budge. You know, back in the day, this would have seen the stock markets collapse. Oil prices came down.
Yes.
You know, so that's how accustomed I think we've become to Donald Trump, that he can do those two things in the 1 week and it has a positive impact on global oil prices and the stock market doesn't budge an inch.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. But is the stock market, is that the right parameter to be measuring this by?
It used to be where it was an indication.
It was an indication. But if we go back to what are the fundamentals, even the threat of the use of force on Greenland, again, is a fundamental breach of that charter that I'm referencing there. But interesting, if you check out the big European powers on Maduro, Germany didn't applaud it, but they weren't in disagreement with it. France were kind of sitting on the fence a bit as well. And the UK, Starmer's kind of, you know, hasn't really condemned it either.
Because they don't want 50% tariffs, so they don't want... They don't want... Yes, yeah, but my point is that they don't want to be shut down with massive tariffs or whatever else it might be. That's the weight, I think, the power that Donald Trump wields now.
Yeah, well, he has all of that and a lot more, but he has the defence of Europe is at stake here, and I think that's even bigger. So I do believe, and that Europe is so dependent, absolutely, they've only ourselves to blame for this, but for the last 40 or 50 years, completely dependent nearly on US big brother standing up for them in the event of a situation arising. Now you have Putin goes into Ukraine, you could have China could look at Taiwan, they could do, and Putin looks at Venezuela and says, oh, well, I'll have that oil. And these no one is standing up to it and saying, well, hold on a minute. Like, even then you go back, let's flip it back into his own country and ICE and what happened. And I believe earlier today, there was another incident in Oregon where there was a couple of people shot as well. Hardly reported. And last night there's a security guy on absolutely saying, yes, he was quite right. He was in danger and therefore he used appropriate force. And they will not be held to account. Because they have qualified immunity from prosecution in such circumstances. Once they can make the case that they consider themselves their life or to be in jeopardy, and they reacted accordingly. Now, within the US, there has to be a lot of disquiet about that. So it's very hard to work out what Trump is really thinking. And by making the saber rattling over Greenland, is he really going to invade Greenland? I don't think so. But what I am intrigued about is, what does he need it for? He already has all he wants to use it for. China and Russia aren't any threat there. They're hundreds of miles away out in the ocean, so they are. They're nowhere near it. So the minerals, I don't believe they can extract them because it's too expensive. So what is it in Greenland that is drawing them there? What's the magnet that comes from Greenland to make them so of interest? So is it within the US state that he's diverting this policy out there to have that is the news today while Nero fiddles while Rome burns?
We are in the company of Seamus Gunn from McLaughlin Gunn Solicitors Letterkenny and Remelton. We're answering your legal questions and we'll get to some of them now. Greg, can I check the law regarding citizen journalism, approaching people on public streets and asking them about people coming to live here and being supported by our government, i.e. immigration? Some of these journalists, they start recording people regardless as to how you answer them, and then they use those videos or repurpose them to back their campaign. I have a very good friend who was unaware of this behaviour, and his video was then used online and he was ridiculed. As a result, he had a horrible Christmas and New Year. So can you demand to remove it? So if you're approached in a public street, Seamus, and yes. you are or aren't aware that you're being recorded, and you find that footage then up on social media and it's been editorialised, I suppose you could say, is there any legal recourse?
Well, yes, Greg, and it's a little bit disturbing in that if one gives an interview, an ad hoc interview, I give an opinion while out for a walk or something, somebody says, you know, what do you think of this? And they give them a view in good faith. And it's meant to be kept between the parties. And that's quite important, as in private, as it were. And then suddenly it goes on some of the social media platforms and is there for everybody to see. And it can be interpreted in a certain way, it can be put up in a certain way, it can be nearly edited in a certain way to put forward a particular view that may or may not be acceptable to the person who's even interviewed, but they have no recourse. That situation is very disquieting and for sure. And I believe that it does invade one's privacy. During the interview, I don't think there's any offence in that in itself. The same thing as recording somebody or taking a photograph of somebody in public. That's not causing any problem. But when you then put it up on a social media platform, it does, and I believe, come under GDPR. And I think that general data protection legislation does come into it. And the person then has certain rights for viewing it and also for them to inquire the justification for publishing it. In the first instance, now they could take two steps. I think they could confront the person who's put it up to requesting that they take action immediately to take it down. And if that does not work, then they have to get onto the social media platform itself and obviously use the GDPR point that this was not taken with their consent. It doesn't represent their views, and they want it removed. In those circumstances, I think they have a very strong case to have it removed, and it should be removed. But the problem arises where you get into a situation where, well, the difference between what is private and what is public. But if the person has not consented to it being published, I think that they're well within their rights to do so, and they shouldn't have a huge issue with it. Now, if it amounts to something like harassment, and it goes a little bit further than that, well, then you could be looking like going down a criminal route and making a complaint. And there's very strong, there's very strong penalties now in place since only a couple of years back in relation to that by way of taking a prosecution. So that would be a question of interpreting it. But I think that the putting it up single-handedly, as it were, unilaterally, without the consent of the person who's the main contributor, I think that's a step too far.
Okay. Morning, Greg. As a widower and not having children, what would happen to my property if I don't have a will made? I have siblings and nieces and nephews. I might like my godchild to inherit the property, but with inheritance tax, I'm not sure they could afford to pay it. Thank you. What happens?
Yeah, let's be sensible about it. And say this, the caller has put forward a question that, yes, there is rationale in it. But the simple answer to it, and it's not always that obvious, is for the individual to go and make arrangements and put some arrangements in place. Otherwise, to answer the question, her estate falls to be distributed in accordance with the 1965 Succession Act. And therefore, as she describes as a widower, it will pass down to her lineal descendants, brothers, sisters, siblings as such, and nephews and nieces of maybe predeceased siblings, brothers or sisters, and be divided among them. And unfortunately, the caller, well, not that she'll have any interest, but she will have no say as to how her estate is dealt with. So the answer to the question really is for her to go ahead, see her solicitor, make some arrangements and put it in place and put the will in place. And therefore, she has certainty about the succession to her estate. Otherwise, and what can happen and often does, and it's unfortunate, but it's just that that's the circumstances that follow, that if there's no arrangements, then you could have a multitude of nephews, nieces inheriting shares of an estate. Mm. And everything and her property, her house or whatever she owns, would have to be sold, liquidated down, and divided equally among them after all expenses are paid. And that may be something that the individual does not want. And if she doesn't want that, well, go along and make some arrangements.
Yeah, and I think that really is, it comes down to, you can't leave it to happenstance. If you are that unaware of what the consequences are now, definitely get into an office and get something sorted.
Yeah. Because she's thinking far too far ahead about her demise, but not thinking about, well, what can I do to control it and to control what happens thereafter? And she still has all that power herself now.
And that will be taken from her. The peace of mind and uncertainty that might be relieved by dealing with it now. Another question in the same space-ish. What's the process or procedure of passing on or adding a son or daughter on the family home? What are the implications, if any, or costs, not costs, but, you know, I think they're looking for a broad idea maybe of implications, implications.
I think what they're hinting at, and it can be very practical, is maybe a situation arises where father and mother are joint owners of the family home, and maybe a son or daughter has decided to stay with them or is living with them, and they might have other children, but they would like that this particular person to inherit it. Now, there's a couple of ways they can do that. They can make their arrangements, and as I referenced there before, and bequeath the property to them under their will. They have a tax threshold now, a son or daughter of around 400,000. So if it doesn't exceed that, there wouldn't be a tax implication. If they lived with them, it wouldn't arise anyway, if they lived with them for a certain period of time before they passed away. So that is an option. The other one, though, that I think what they're hinting at is now actually transferring the property into the two names or one names of the parents and the child. Mm-hmm. So that therefore, whenever they would pass away in the normal scheme of things, but maybe not, that if that was the last person surviving, then on survivorship, they, as a joint tenant, they would automatically come into the property with the production of death cert of those that were on the title jointly with them. So to do that, they're going to need to go along, they're going to need to get some representation to get a valuation of the property and a transfer of it into maybe two or three names, and natural laws of succession applying. They could ultimately come into it by way of survivorship to the joint tenancy.
With no tax implications?
Well, unless we're into a situation exceeding the figure that I have said there, 400K, I don't believe so.
Right.
And if it's a situation where they were cohabiting with them and they remain in it, and that's their only home, then it could be an exempt property in any event. Even if they weren't a child, if they were a nephew or a niece, that is an exemption that can, and it's very practical, and does sometimes arise.
All right, Seamus, if anyone needs any advice, obviously there's lots of solicitors and lawyers and all that out there. You are out there as part of Seamus Gunn & McLaughlin, Gunn Solicitors in Letterkenny, with your physical offices in those two locations and online as well.
Yes, Greg, we hope so, yeah. DonegalSolicitor.ie, or just keep it to gun.ie, and we hope you'll find us, and we should be there to help.
All right. Take care of yourself, Seamus Gunn. He'll be back with us in a few weeks' time with more answers to your legal questions. Right.